All right, we're back on Big Board Sports. Big old series tonight, man. Everyone's all jacked up. It's the Red Sox and the Yankees in the Bronx. I'm actually looking forward to week one of the NFL season, to be quite frank with you. But we're not there yet. We'll throw on a little Red Sox and Yankees tonight. Why not? Tim Healy joins us. He covers the Red Sox with the Boston Globe, and he joins us here on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm doing great, especially because I'll be watching baseball and not football this weekend.
There you go.
I'll balance you out. How about that?
I hear you, buddy. I hear you. All right, set the stage. I mean, this is the Yankees, they stunk for a while, right? Yankees were stinking up the joint. Their stench was everywhere. And now all of a sudden, here they go with a 5-game winning streak. Boston was playing pretty well. Seems like they're not playing great right now. What's going to happen in this 4-game series?
What's going to happen is the biggest series of the season for both teams. And I said that slowly because I was thinking it through as I said it. And I really don't think it's hyperbole. It's a huge, huge series. It's 4 games for rivals, of course, we know that, who are separated by half a game in the AL East and the AL wildcard standings. And there's a lot on the line. Both teams have their best pitchers lined up, at least most of them, you know, to whatever degree they have their 4 good pitchers. And it's, you alluded to it in the buildup to the question, but in the 2 months that since these two teams have seen each other, the Red Sox have been significantly better than the Yankees on the whole. In the last week or so, the opposite is true. The Yankees are starting to figure it out, and the Red Sox are skidding a little bit. So we'll see which version of both teams we get, but it should be a lot of fun. The Yankees are hot all of a sudden. Giancarlo Stanton hits a lot of home runs. Aaron Judge is playing after being on the injured list. And for the Red Sox, it'll be fun because it'll be Roman Anthony's first time at Yankee Stadium. He was a minor leaguer still when the Red Sox were at Yankee Stadium in early June, and now he is an on-base machine and their leadoff guy. So it should be pretty good.
What about the pitching matchups? Who do you give the edge to there when you lay the pitching matchups out in this 4-game series?
You know, I kind of like the Red Sox in all of them. They have maybe a significantly better rotation right now. So tonight, for example, it's Giolito versus Luis Gil, who has not been very good since coming back from his lat injury, advantage Red Sox. Tomorrow, Brian Bello versus Max Fried. And you would think that's not an advantage for the Yankees, but on the season they're pretty even, and Fried lately has not been good, whereas Bello has. Saturday is Garrett Crochet versus Will Warren. Easy advantage for the Red Sox. And then Sunday, you got to give it to the Yankees. It's Dustin May against Carlos Rodon. And May's been good in a couple of starts with the Red Sox, don't get me wrong, but Carlos Rodon is really solid. So that one should be a layup for the Yankees if there are any this weekend.
Talking some Boston Red Sox baseball ahead of their big series against the New York Yankees starting tonight with Tim Healy from the Boston Globe here on Big Board Sports 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio, and the free 104.5 The Team app. Tim, piggybacking off of your comments you just made about Dustin May, how big of an impact do you think he'll have on this starting rotation here between now and the rest of the regular season and potentially the postseason for this Red Sox team since acquiring him?
So those are two different questions, regular season and postseason. I'll take them in order. For the regular season, he is threatening to have a sneaky big impact because through 3 starts so far, he has something like a 2.5 ERA, maybe not even that high. His last 2 starts in particular have been very, very good. And in acquiring Dustin May, the Red Sox wanted a back of the rotation stabilizer, innings eater kind of guy. None of the other choices they cycled through had provided that. So if Dustin May is more than that, and they catch lightning in a bottle like this for, let's say, 6 more starts, 7 more starts till the regular season is over, then that is a coup for the Red Sox. And then come postseason, Howie figures in, you know, you don't need as many starters, of course, during a short playoff series. They have their top three in Crochet, Giolito, and Bayo. So can Dustin May be that number four starter? I think right now he is, because Walker Buehler hasn't been good enough for that. So Dustin May, in addition to providing stability in the back row rotation, is competing himself with, you know, snagging that number four spot in a potential postseason rotation. So, you know, he can have a huge impact.
So these two teams, Red Sox and Yankees, is there a dislike between the two? They just not like each other?
You know, I don't think that's as true these days as it was 20 years ago. I think, unfortunately, that's true in a lot of cases. Take the Yankees as an example. They have more hatred, and the fans certainly have more hatred, I think, of the Astros in recent years and the Rays in recent years. Red Sox-Yankees hasn't been too hot lately, which is a bummer. I would love for it to be hot as a rivalry. That said, it does always draw the fans, and there's always a good atmosphere, you know, especially on a weekend series like this. So it should be awesome. It should be great. But I don't know that there's that personal animosity the way there used to be.
And you're right. This series is huge for both. But I think the way these two teams right now, we are talking with Tim Healy from the Boston Globe, the way these two teams are playing right now, it seems like it's even more meaningful for Boston, right? Because they're reeling a little bit, and the Yankees have it rolling.
Yes. That's well put. The Red Sox are in a spot right now where if they lose 3 out of 4, or if they get swept, that is disaster level weekend. So they really cannot afford that. What's interesting about the Red Sox is if they can even split this series, win 2 out of 4 games, then that clinches for them the season series. And with the season series comes the tiebreaker if the teams finish with the same record at the end of the year. So that is an extra layer of relevancy on the line this weekend.
One more from me here, Tim. It's been a little while since the trade has passed, but do you think the Red Sox are far better off this offense without Rafael Devers, or do you think, in a way, some fans and from covering this team, the offense is maybe missing his bat here in recent weeks?
I mean, they could use an extra bat like that, but it's hard to disagree with the results. I'm a big fan of, you know, that old poetic line, you are what your record says you are, right?
Mm.
And when the Red Sox traded Rafael Devers, they were one game over 500 after a weekend sweep of the Yankees. And since trading Rafael Devers, they are, I want to say, 8 games over 500 and a much more dynamic team, a better overall team. And that's the fact of the matter. And maybe that would have happened with Devers as well, but there would have been a lot of tentacles and a lot of ripple effects of the trade that have worked in the Red Sox favor since then, including Roman Anthony, who came up, had consistent playing time available, including at DH initially. So I think whether or not they would have been better off with or without Devers, it's hard to say with certainty. But what I am comfortable saying is that the Red Sox in the front office, in the clubhouse, are very comfortable with how things have worked out.
And whoever made that decision, take a bow. Whoever was the final one.
Yeah.
Because you know what? When that came out, the across the board, most everyone was saying, oh, the Red Sox are throwing in the towel here. They're not doing anything this season. They just gave up on Devers. This is going to be a disaster of a year for Boston. And look where they're at right now.
Yeah. It's, you know, Craig Breslow and John Henry, they knew in the moment that it would be an impossible sell to the fan base, to the public. And they did it anyway. And they just had to sit there and take it, basically, initially. And now it's working out great. So, you know, credit to those guys.
All right. Well, listen, enjoy the series. Enjoy watching the baseball this weekend. And then eventually you'll talk about the New England Patriots.
Yeah. Yes. I look forward to it.
Thank you, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right, Tim Healy, Boston Globe, setting the stage. He thinks pitching wise, he give the edge to the Red Sox. You agree?
Yeah, it could be a slight edge, either even split down the middle or probably a slight edge to Boston. Rodon, yes, on the Sunday night game. Fried has not been pitching good. Schlittler won't be pitching. Will Warren's been good, but you don't know how he's going to pitch against the Red Sox.
Put Sweet Willie on the mound this weekend.
No more Sweet Willie the slander. He's been good his last seven
Cam
starts.
Cam Schlittler is your boy. Your guy.
He's been good.
He has been really good. I have been locked into him since the first night he pitched at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah,
I went,
Seattle.
You know what? That young man went out there and didn't care.
No. Like, which not a lot of guys. Most
I
guys
have
do care.
Earned the right to be in the mound at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
And I know I'm a young guy and I'm making my first start, blah, 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 blah. He took that ball and didn't care.
He did not. Which
he
is the
used
most
every
impressive
talent
thing.
That he has. He's got a lot of
yeah.
talent.
Yeah, and he doesn't change facial expressions out there.
No,
like
he
you
doesn't.
Said. He's just unflappable.
That's what
there.
I like about him.
Yeah, and he throws triple digits, which is hard to hit. When he's got that breaking ball working with it like last night, he can be pretty untouchable.
Yeah, he gives up some home runs every once in a while when he doesn't locate, and there's a little bit off the fastball they can turn on it. But, well, yeah, but fortunately, there's nobody on base when he gives
up. He hasn't
really
imploded yet.
But, I do like Cam Schlittler, and Max Fried has been getting fried. I have no idea what is wrong with him, but let's hope if you're a Yankee fan that he reverts back to the way he was at the beginning of the year when everybody thought he was going to win the Cy Young.
Right, exactly. Probably not going to win the Cy Young. Garrett Crochet has a real chance to win
Garrett
the Cy
Crochet
Young.
Garrett Crochet could win the Cy
but
Young.
But I think it'll be probably Tarek Skubal's.
It is our number two, Roger Weiland, Michael Johnson Jr. We have Lucas McGarry in the house in his final internship days at the Mighty 1-3 and Joe Lorenzo across the glass, all of them getting ready to go back to their college ways, which is not a bad thing at all. And we open up hour two with the New York Jets, and Michael Nania joins us from the X Factor and the Cool Your Jets podcast as we close in on the start of a new season about 14 days away from week one in the NFL. And Michael, good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing great.
Appreciate a few minutes. What have you seen from the Jets? The word on the street is they're going to have to be able to run the football because the quarterback, Justin Fields, can't throw it.
Yeah, it's definitely been a shaky start to the preseason. Well, complete preseason. He won't be playing in the finale tomorrow, but it was a shaky preseason run for Fields and wasn't a huge sample size. He only played three drives between the two games, but yeah, and this most recent one against the Giants and their starting defense, although they didn't even have Dexter Lawrence out there, it was a rough go for him. He threw a screen pass in the dirt. He panicked under pressure and missed a check down. There was a play he scrambled when receivers were open. So, you know, the Jets have been their offensive coordinator, Tanner Engstrand, talked yesterday. He defended Fields, talked about how he's fine with the lack of an explosive passing game and that he trusts that Fields we'll take what the defense gives him, but, you know, there's a balance there to where, you know, it's okay to be efficient and take short passes, but you also have to have good accuracy, good decision-making, and take those explosives when they're there as well. And it's been a rough training camp for him also, so the preseason kind of showed some of what we've seen in training camp. So it's been a rocky go of it, but at the same time, I think a lot of the Jets playbook hasn't been shown yet between camp. In the preseason, you know, the quarterback run game between the read options, the design runs, I don't think the Jets have fully unleashed that yet because you don't want to get him. Obviously, he's not getting hit in practice. And then in preseason, you don't want to risk that either. So I think there are elements we haven't seen yet, but at the same time, there are fundamental things that do need to get ironed out if they're going to have success in any, you know, sort of way.
Yeah, and that's been historically just in his career an issue with him, you know, hitting open receivers and completing passes downfield. On the flip side, he certainly can run the football and scramble and get away from the pass rush and make something happen with his legs, and it looks like the Jets should have a good running game with a pretty good offensive line. Is that fair?
Yeah, the run game definitely has a lot of optimism to it, and you've seen that in both of the two preseason games. With the first-team offensive line out there against Green Bay, against the Giants, they were moving the line of scrimmage consistently, and that's despite, you know, what we just talked about. The other team knows that the Jets' passing game isn't a threat right now. They had more than twice as many rush attempts than pass attempts with the first-team offense on the field between the first two preseason games, and despite that, they still average over 5 yards a rush attempt. So if you can get that many yards a pop on the ground, despite the predictability of not having a downfield passing game, then it shows that you're moving the line of scrimmage. And that showed up on film as well. So, yeah, that offensive line has plenty of talent. They have a balanced backfield between Breece Hall. Braylon Allen has been mauling defenders using his big frame. Isaiah Davis as well. And then Fields hasn't, you know, like I said, hasn't really gotten involved yet, but definitely will be a huge factor in terms of design plays once the regular season arrives. So the run game looks pretty good. It's just going to be interesting to see how they balance that in the pass game. Can they ride this run game to success without much of a passing game to back it up?
Michael, the speed of the passing game, Garrett Wilson, Justin Fields connection. We saw it at Ohio State. Obviously, preseason, it's been a limited sample size. How big of a year do you think Garrett Wilson could have this year? We know he has shown some great flashes, been a terrific receiver, and with that new well-deserved extension when Aaron Rodgers was quarterback. But with Justin Fields now a quarterback, you think Wilson is poised for another big year as wide receiver one for the Jets?
I do think for Wilson specifically, he does have a high ceiling. Despite the concerns about the passing game overall, that combination should work pretty well because we've seen with Fields, specifically in 2023 when the Bears traded for DJ Moore, Moore had the best season of his career that season, and Fields had tremendous numbers thrown to him, especially on the deep ball, which is something that Wilson hasn't enjoyed in his career. The Jets haven't had a quarterback who could throw deep over the last 3 years, so I think that connection should work well. You know, Fields is still, at this point, mostly a one-read quarterback. If that first read isn't there, he's usually not going to do too much. So that combination, in terms of the stats that Wilson could put up, I think it's a good combo. We haven't seen it yet in the preseason. They didn't connect on a single one of the passes they attempted, but it was a small sample in the preseason. I think that connection is going to work pretty well. It's just, where is the rest of the production going to come in the passing game outside of that connection?
Michael Nanio with us, Jets X Factor, Cool Your Jets podcast, NFL season ready to roll here. Final preseason games are this weekend, and then it's on to week one. How about on the flip side, Michael? What do you see defensively from the New York Jets?
Well, they made two trades yesterday that definitely signaled a weakness that I think they identified. They traded for two defensive tackles, Juwan Briggs from the Browns, Harrison Phillips from the Vikings, who's been a longtime starter, was with the Bills for a while ago. But yeah, they had a weakness there in the interior defensive line, especially with run stopping. And both of these guys are run first, big body defensive tackles, strong guys. So I think they upgraded there, and that should help them against the Bills, the Patriots, two teams that like to run the ball inside. So they just upgraded yesterday, I think, but they're getting healthy. Quinnen Williams missed some practices, hasn't played in the preseason. He's back out there in full. Jermaine Johnson finally got back out there into team drills, coming off of his Achilles injury. So they're getting healthy on the defensive line. The secondary, you know, he still got Sauce back there. Brandon Stevens, the corner they signed from Baltimore, has had a fantastic camp. So defensively, you know, the depth chart has some holes, but with the two trades yesterday, it looks a little deeper than I think a lot of people were prepared for throughout most of this summer.
Well, they can't be much worse than last year, right? The Jets ranked 31 of the 32 teams in run defense, and they let up 91.8 rushing yards per game. That has to be improved.
Yeah, for sure. And it was a huge, throughout really the whole Robert Saleh era, it wasn't a huge priority to have run-stopping defensive tackles. But if you look at the Lions defense with Aaron Glenn, it was a much bigger priority for him to have defensive linemen who could play both ways, both the pass and the run. More of a priority on kind of strength, being able to plug gaps, than athleticism, and more so having a balance between those two things. And we've seen that between their moves throughout most of the offseason and then complemented by the trades they made yesterday. So there's still questions with the pass rush depth for sure, especially with Johnson coming off of his injury. But run game-wise, with these two trades yesterday, I think definitely looking up, and specifically with how they match up against Buffalo and New England.
How big of a year do you think the rookie right tackle Armon Membu could have here, Michael? I mean, obviously you had Ole Fashanu last year out of Penn State, but Membu, you might have two future bookend tackles here for the time being to complement Elijah Vera Tucker, Joe Tippmann, and an already solid offensive line. How do you think the big guy at right tackle is going to do in his rookie year?
Yeah, I think Ole Fashanu kind of set a good bar for what Membu is going to shoot for this year. You know, when Fashanu finally got to left tackle late last season, his natural position, he was about a league average-ish kind of starting left tackle. And if you're, you know, that's one of the toughest positions to play as a rookie, is to be an offensive lineman going against such a huge jump in the level of athleticism you're playing against. So if you could be a league average starter as a first round pick as a rookie, that's such a high floor for you to set. And then you take a leap the next year and the next year after that, starting from that point, that puts you on a trajectory to be a star in the league. So I think Membu's capable of being a league average type of starting right tackle this year. He played really well against the Packers, up and down against the Giants, but he had some high point plays to go with the losses. Kayvon Thibodeau got him a couple times, but I could see him being a league average starter this year.
All right, Michael, what's your win-loss total here? The Michael Nania win-loss total on the New York Jets.
I'm gonna stand on the number that I've had in mind throughout the entire summer. I'm gonna go with 7-10. It's a 2-win jump compared to last year. It's a step up. I think if they can get a quality 7 wins, stay competitive, play disciplined, physical football, I think it puts them in a good position going forward. It's just, you need a quarterback, and I'm not sure they have it yet. But I'll go with 7-10.
Fair enough, Michael. Always a pleasure. Keep up the great work with your podcast, Cool Your Jets podcast, and we'll talk to you as the NFL season gets ready to roll on.
Thanks for having me.
You got
Thanks,
it, Michael.
Michael.
Week one, ready to roll. Woo. Here. 14 days away from kickoff to the National
Cowboys
Football
Eagles,
League season. Magic number is down to 4 for the Valley Cats doubleheader tonight. A lot of doubleheaders for Greg Taggart to try to manage these days. And the manager joins us on the manager show once a week here on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. How are you, Greg?
Good, Roger. Good, guys. Thanks for having me again.
Is it me, or has there been a lot of doubleheaders recently?
Oh, my goodness. you know, going back to that early part of the season, Roger, you know, you don't really worry about it too much, but in the back of my mind, you know, we got rained out, I believe, opening night, if I'm correct.
You did. I do remember.
Yeah, opening night. And then the following Tuesday, a rain out against this Boulders club. And then the following week, we're at the Boulders and a rain out then. So, you know, you knew eventually they were going to happen. And I had the calendar circled. And, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, players at all levels in baseball will – you know, the rain out, sometimes they're nice, they're helpful, but the trade-off of the doubleheaders can be some wear and tear on the ball club.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, I was there. We did our live TV, hashtag Rods on the Road, Greg, from the Joe, and sponsored by Mohawk Chevrolet and Together Let's Drive, and we've driven a lot to the Joe, and I'm talking to Matt Callanan, and I'm looking at the forecast, and I'm like, all right, well, Wednesday is going to be a total washout. And Matt goes, yeah, you know what that means? Another doubleheader for the Valley Cats. I'm like, you got it. So here you go tonight. How are you navigating the doubleheader tonight with your pitching?
Well, we've, you know, fortunately from the pitching side of things, you know, coming on some of the news, I'm sure we'll talk about the unfortunate news with Arlo Riznak's situation, you know, but, you know, we're going to be okay tonight. These doubleheaders, you know, the one trade-off at the minor league level is the games are 7 innings, and so it allows you a little bit of flexibility. You know, hopefully the other night, Steven Still throws a 7-inning complete game, was just masterful, you know, just an outstanding outing. So you hope for one of those out of the two starts tonight, Mikel Manzano and Connor Wilford, who's really emerged as one of the better starting pitchers in this league, not only on our club, and he's done a wonderful job for us.
All right, well, you just threw out Arlo, and it didn't sound great. So what's the latest on Arlo Marinchek from Bethlehem High School in Siena?
Yeah, you know, and our opening night starter and such a great story going back to last year, making this ball club out of Siena and the work he's put in. And I think, you know, a little bit of what we've experienced with Arlo this year and what he's had to go through, missed some time. We missed just about 30 days, you know, before and after the All-Star break total. And he's dealt with a little bit of a shoulder issue, nothing serious, some fatigue, some of those things. And one of the things that I know, you know, Arlo and I talked about on Monday night was, you know, and going back to the time that he was so ready back in February, you know, he had some opportunities present himself, you know, with the Boston Red Sox with a workout, got ready February, and, you know, had an experience where he was a little tired, a little shut down early in the season, you know, which was a little unusual, but it finally has caught up with him. His first three starts after coming back off the injured list, it wasn't quite the same. He was having a little trouble recovering. And for his career, and Roger, we put it this way, you know, when we talked, if he was a 35-year-old veteran and on the end of his career, we'd probably, and I'd be the first one to say, hey, let's gut through it, you know, this last couple weeks. But, you know, he's got a good career ahead of him. And you know, the smart thing to do here was to shut him down for the season. You know, he's getting checked by the doctor. And just to make sure, well, we don't think anything's wrong other than fatigue in the shoulder that he's had to battle through for the last month and a half, 2 months.
Gotcha. Well, that is too bad for Arlo because he was an All-Star this year, right? He made the All-Star team, you know?
Yeah, 12 stars. You know, and, you know, even with, you know, some of the things that we saw in the last few weeks that it wasn't quite coming out of the hand the same, and some of the things like, you know, you look at whether it's the velocity or the pitches, and, you know, he's still battling, competing. He's going to be in the dugout every night, rooting us on. Arlo is one of the easy ones to pick out in that dugout when you know, as you could, you know, whenever you're there. But he's a big part of our ball club, and, you know, he's got a bright future ahead of him.
No doubt about it. Well, that's disappointing news, but I do understand where you're coming from, and you're right. Had he been a little bit older and maybe this was the tail end of his career, you kind of give this a shot because it doesn't sound like it's serious, but this isn't the tail end of his career, and you're going to want him back next year to be 100%, and it makes sense to me, and we'll wish Arlo the best of times here and a speedy recovery and a good off season, and we'll see him back on the mat at the Joe next season. How important, Greg, is it for you guys to leave the Joe when the weekend is over and to have clinched a playoff spot? Your magic number is 4.
Oh, Roger, you know, trust me, I would. I don't want to look too far ahead, and certainly the club we're playing tonight is playing with the same type of desperation or playoff game atmosphere every night that we've been playing with. And so, you know, you've got two, you know, tough ball games ahead of us tonight. But what you just said would be, you know, would be one of those things you don't talk about very much, but you're hopeful for in the back of your mind and hopefully, you know, get a chance to not only, you know, this club has gone so hard, you know, all season and certainly, you know, since that All-Star break and, you know, on one end, we've really done a nice job to at least close the gap with Quebec a little bit. And we've done a nice job there, but you've got teams on our heels. You've got this Ottawa club, which I think is 40-16 in their last 56. They just, you know, won't let up. And just like you expect good teams to play down the stretch. And with this New York club, always dangerous. So, of course, if we could do something over the next 4 days that puts us in a position where that last week we can take a little bit of a breather, but at the same time, I think we all know, you know, the great thing about, you know, clinching any kind of spot early is you can start setting things up for a postseason. But the most important thing is these next 4 days to get there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, you got a beautiful night for baseball. It's the double dip. Starts at 5. Remember, it's a 7-inning game, not the 9 one. It's a doubleheader. So go get them tonight. Get that magic number down even further. And we wish you nothing but the best of luck, Greg. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you, Greg. Greg Taggart. Not good news on Arlo Marinčić, but it's not like his career's over. They're just shutting him down for the rest of the season. He's been really a big part of what they've been able to do this year. And Arlo is from Bethlehem High School and went on to have a nice career at Siena. And this is his second year in the Frontier League with the Tri-City Valley Cats. All right, it is hour number 3 on Big Board Sports on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. And back by popular demand is Dr. Flick from Ortho New York. Doctor, good afternoon, my friend.
Hey, Roger. How are you doing?
Well, you know what? To be honest with you, man, when you're on, you move the needle, Doc. My goodness. The popularity of Dr. Flick in this area is incredible. Yeah.
I got to see those numbers. I don't know.
Well, you'll appreciate this story and maybe you can relate a little bit. So my son is a freshman at Ithaca. He playing college football, dropped him off on Tuesday, and he did a good job over the summer of, you know, getting himself, trying to do his sprinting and getting himself in shape. But one thing I told him that he really should do before he goes off is get a couple of workouts in the weight room. Do you think he listened to me, doctor? Do you think he did?
Well, no. if he's like my boys, they know better.
Yeah. He doesn't get into the weight room, and then they get him over there for the last 2 weeks, and they're doing nothing but football because there's no classes starting yet. Mm. And I say, Brady, how the heck are you doing, buddy? He says, Dad, I am super, super sore. So if you would have listened to me before you left and you have gotten into the weight room, you might not be as sore. Am I right, doctor?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, this is a lot of the injuries that we see are overuse injuries like that people are just not prepping for, and so we see that all the time. This is the time of year in the fall, football and soccer, and you know, the kids are enjoying their summers and they're on the lake or doing whatever, and getting right back into things like that is kind of a setup for some muscle soreness or some bigger injuries.
What is a plan? What would be a good plan if I'm dropping my kid off, and I'm sure they have a plan, but I mean, what would you advise a plan of a freshman coming in? He's been recruited, like he's an athlete. I get all that, but still, you've got to get your body ready to play a college football season, and you got a couple of weeks. They're not in pads right away yet. What are we doing here to make sure we're trying to prevent some injuries from happening?
Yeah, sure. So, there's no foolproof way, but a general idea is, you know, for an athlete at your son's level playing a college sport, you know, he should have a season of where he's kind of off of his sport and resting, and we like that, but never doing nothing, you know. So he should really be in the weight room, and I'm sure he was to some degree doing some sort of weights, you know, all summer long, really. And then it's just a matter of gradually increasing that to get to rev it up, you know. So when he sets foot on campus, and you know, first thing they're going to do with all those players is probably put them through a quick, you know, let's see who what your max bench and your squat and all that is. And you know, that's where if you haven't been gearing up for the first month or two before then, you're not going to be at your best, and you're going to feel it. You may have some injuries. So you know, I generally tell people, you know, your season, if it starts September 1st, you really better be starting to prep, you know, for sure in the beginning of August or late July. So 4 to 6 weeks anyway.
So Dr. Flick is with us. His resume is very, very impressive with what you've been able to do. And a lot of, I love it because it's all sports related. So anybody out there has a sports related injury, Dr. Flick would be a really good orthopedic surgeon to go and see, orthopedic sports medicine surgery. But I see you were with the Chicago White Sox as an assistant team physician back in the day. And here's one of my things about baseball, and I don't know that I fully understand this either, and that is so many hamstring injuries, Dr. Flick. When I see a major league player going full speed, running down the first base, and all of a sudden I see the hamstring or him holding the back of his leg, but I also know that prior to the game, they have fully stretched. I mean, you can't stretch any more than you stretch, and yet I still see the hamstring injuries. Can you explain that one?
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of those injuries very similar to almost all of the things we see, you know, the Achilles tendon ruptures in basketball. I mean, these muscle groups are really at their maximum strain almost every day with everything these guys do. So, you know, these guys, you know, baseball is really, it's you know, people don't think of it this way, but it's a sprinting game. Whether you're sprinting for a ball in the outfield or you've just hit a single and you're sprinting to the bag, you know, this abrupt contracture of the muscle groups lead to these injuries, these overstretching injuries. A strain, you know, we'll probably talk about the elbow flexor strains and hamstring strains and, you know, Achilles strains. These are all, it just means an aggressive, rapid stretch to that muscle that is, you know, above the level that the muscle's capable of handling, and the muscle gets injured. And so, you know, soccer players, baseball players, even the running backs in football, we see a lot of, unfortunately, these chronic hamstring injuries. No sure way to prevent them, but definitely the stretching that they do before the games, the balancing their quad strength and their hamstring strength. Usually the hamstrings are kind of not worked as much as the quads are in the gym, so maybe a little bit more focus on hamstring strengthening in the off season.
Hey Doc, you know, Roger brings up a common injury in baseball with hamstrings. Another one's the oblique, right? And the Yankees currently have not one but two pitchers, Ryan Yarbrough and Fernando Cruz, on the 15-day IL with a pair of oblique injuries. You know, it seems to be common with a lot of starting pitchers. Max Scherzer had an oblique injury a couple years ago too. How significant of an injury can that be, and especially with the fact, Doc, of affecting that pitcher's production long term after they suffer an oblique injury during the year?
Yeah, good question. So those two players on the Yankees, it's, you know, the Cruz is a right-hander, I think, and I think I saw it's a left oblique, and Yarbrough's a left pitcher, right oblique. So it's, you know, there's a lot of, as you guys know, the baseball pitch is one of the most complicated and complex maneuvers we do in sports, and there's a lot of power that gets transferred from the lower body and core through the through your core, and which is your obliques or the muscles on the side of your core there. Though when you're turning and throwing that pitch 100 miles an hour, those muscles, just like the hamstrings when you're sprinting, are seeing a high load, and so a strain to that means that muscle stretched or partially tore. To answer your question, I don't think it's significant for a long-term problem. Most of these will respond to a good period of rest and stretching and you know, stopping the throwing motion for a period of time. And I don't think there's a lot of players that you know, have, you know, career-ending injuries when they have an oblique strain. This is more of a temporary, should be relatively short-term, you know, problem for them.
Doc, how would you treat Brandon Nimmo? He's out day-to-day with neck stiffness. Are you ready for his symptoms, Doc?
Yeah, no, he's a Doc, I don't do much with spines, but yeah, the neck is a, you know, neck and back problems are really hard to predict. People ask me, you know, well, how long is he going to be out? You know, what's it going to mean? And that's very hard to predict, you know. But yeah, what symptoms does he have?
It cracked us up earlier, and I'm still laughing about it. The symptoms, Doc, when you get this in front of your desk and you see Nimmo and you're Dr. Flick and you're sitting there, how are we going to deal with this guy? Here are the symptoms. Difficulty with the swing, difficulty running, and difficulty looking up for fly balls.
Okay, down to the minors for a little while.
He's going to AAA, Doc.
He can't do anything, Doc. Yeah. That's what the word is there. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing when you have a body part that's not working right. It's amazing how it affects you with everything you do, you know, and that's just what you just described there.
Doc, do some people handle pain tolerance better than others?
Yes, the Firewolves players were great with pain management, handling pain. Hockey players are great. It's a bummer that we're losing the Firewolves. Those guys were great to take care of, because when they were injured or came to you with a complaint, you knew there was something going on.
So you're not moving.
I don't know if it's a personality thing or a sports thing, but definitely there's a difference in different athletes.
Doc, you're not moving to Oshawa?
I told Coach that I'd come up there if they need somebody once in a while, but I'm just bummed that they're out of town. They're leaving. That's got to be another wake-up call for Albany. Somehow we've got to figure out a way to keep teams here and successful.
Yeah, I mean, you can't blame Oliver Marty, the owner. I mean, you can only lose so much money, and when you get to the point where you don't see how you can make up the money that you did lose, and it's not going to improve as much as you need it to, you have no choice to do what he did. I don't blame Oliver Marty.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Well, Doc, keep up the great work. You're very popular guy out there when it comes to sports injuries at Ortho New York. You guys all do a phenomenal job. And honestly, Doc, we love the partnership. We do try to keep it light when you pop on with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we enjoy this with you guys, and you guys are great, so thanks a lot.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thanks, Doc.
Appreciate you, Dr. Flick from Ortho New York.
Moves the needle.
Moves the needle.
Yeah.
Moves the needle.
He does a good job.